Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of the Street Photography Show podcast. I am your host, Mark Rossi, and tonight I will be speaking with Kevin Martin, who is based out of Las Vegas, Nevada. Stick around, this is going to be a good one. Kevin Martin is a multi-talented individual who has made a name for himself in the indie film industry and photography. With a background in professional basketball, freelance photography, and filmmaking, Martin has become known for his comedic writing, clear visions, and ability to create both indie and mainstream content that is darkly funny, slapstick, and thought-provoking. He is set to release his first analog book entitled A Dangerously High Perspective Volume 1, which features 35mm editorials. Additionally, he will be releasing a book on classic cars titled Being Classically Modern, also shot on 35mm. Welcome to the Street Photography Show, Kevin Martin. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm awesome. Listen, thanks so much for doing this. It's an honor to have you on the show. Looking forward to our chat.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this. I was very excited to kind of be a part of this, so this is going to be fun.
Can you tell the listeners and myself, where do you currently live, and how did you get into photography?
So I live in Las Vegas, Nevada. This is my second time living here, this time permanently. I got into film photography mostly because of my grandmother when I was younger. My grandmother was really big on the arts. She was a teacher. She was really big on the arts, took pictures of everything. And at one point, I felt like she had a camera with her all the time. And she really taught me how to develop in a dark room. And that was at the time where I'm old enough where film was quote unquote dying. So I don't think I appreciated it enough at the time. So yeah, I learned it from her and it came of my love. I carry a camera almost everywhere. I've had an every day since I was probably 16 years old.
How long has it been? I mean, you said you started with film photography, which is kind of cool because a lot of people nowadays, anyways, they'll start with digital and you started with film. That's awesome. That is really cool.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it also tells you how old. I mean, I about to turn 41. I've been doing film photography, I would say from a professional standpoint, probably 15 years, but I've legitimately, to put in perspective, I've probably in my life taken more pictures with a phone than I have with a digital camera, unless I was doing cinematography. So like I do that every so often, but it's always been film.
That's really cool because I've got a few years on you, I'll be honest. And I too have been shooting more, I would say, in my lifetime, I've shot more on film than digital. That's for sure. I was like that too growing up. I was always with a film camera in my hand, believe it or not. In the 80s, I was always carrying around my little camera. Mm-hmm. And that was my toy. I didn't care for what were toys of the 80s. I mean, He-Man, the figurines,
yeah,
like the action figurines,
yeah,
like Transformers, yeah, like G.I. Joes, you know, racetracks. That was a thing. A lot of kids my age really wanted, like those racetracks that you build them up and the whole living room was a racetrack and you push the remote control and it would just go. That was a huge thing. Everybody wanted racing tracks. I didn't really care for that stuff much. I mean, yeah, if someone gave it to me for Christmas, and honestly, that's the only time I was ever given toys because I never asked for toys growing up. I never cared for toys. My toy was pretty much hanging out with my friends and my camera. That's it. That was my thing. That was my childhood growing up. I didn't care much for toys.
Basically the same for me. I mean, truthfully, outside of, I used to have a camera or a car, like, and I didn't even race the cars. I would genuinely collect the cars and put them in rows. Like, I was really big on like getting little packages of cars and stuff like a Hot Wheels. And I wasn't really big on like running around with them. I just liked collecting them. And the camera was right there. I probably have more analog photos of me holding cars and being taken pictures of with my cars. It was always those two things. And then as I got older, it was always a book, a notebook. I was always drawing or writing or something like that.
That's the best though, right? You don't really rely on these commercial toys, but you find other ways to entertain yourself, I suppose. Absolutely. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but you know, you've been shooting mostly film. Let's be honest, right? That's what we've established. You've been shooting mostly film. What film camera did you start with? I mean, can you even remember? And what are you shooting now?
Yes, actually. So I actually found it again recently. When I was old enough to have it, I was with an Olympus AF1 when it first came out. So actually, it's like a point and shoot. And my grandmother.
It's a Plastics Fantastics camera.
Exactly. And my grandmother had that, and she had one that she always had, a Canon AE1, you know, it was all black. I used to love it. But she had the AF1 Olympus, and I remember kind of pulling that out of her purse one day and just kind of like, you know, taking quick pictures of it. And eventually that became the camera I had. So I always had that. And then I lost it to time, obviously. And I'd been searching for it, but then I kind of fell off. I played professional basketball. I was running around the world. I never really thought I would see it because at that point, film photography was not as popular as it is now. And it got lost to time. And then somewhere around probably 4, maybe 3 years ago, I was in an antique store in the middle of, I think I was in Jersey or New York, somewhere in New York. And I went in there and there was a bunch of cameras and I saw it and I looked at the price. And at that point, because it wasn't popular, they were selling the Olympus AF1 for like, I think they were selling it for like $20.
It couldn't be that much.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, okay, you know what? I remember this camera. I'd pick up this camera. This woman looked at me and was like, yeah, I mean, in fact, I think the woman didn't even realize that they were still making film. And she goes, I mean, I don't know why you would want it. I don't think they make film, which is weird at that time where people thought they weren't making Polaroid film or film at all. But I was like, oh, okay. And I grabbed this thing up for whatever, under $20. And I've had it ever since. It sits in my bag or in my car with me all the time.
Well, it's kind of funny because this is the shop owner that's telling you this, right?
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you be encouraging me to buy it? That's exactly. That's like the weird part. That's like, the weird part to me. It's like, yeah, it's for sale. Why wouldn't you want to sell it?
Yeah, exactly. It was like, they're like, you know, she really gave me the thought. But I was like, if you want to waste your time, I'm like, yeah, I guess I'll waste my time. You know what I mean? Like, it was very weird.
It is weird. It's like, you're selling it. What are you trying to do? Not sell it? I mean, it's kind of funny because this past summer, my family and I, we went up north for a trip, right? Like, you know, just like a weekend thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whenever I spot one of those antique stores, I always stop. Like, my wife is like, oh my God, not again. Seriously? I was like, yes, again, I gotta stop.
Oh, man.
You know what I'm looking for, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So I go in, we go into the, I don't remember the town now, but anyways, I walk in and it was a couple of teenage girls that was working there. And I asked them, I said, do you have any camera stuff? And they said, yeah, I think there's some in the back there. So anyways, I went to the back where they were pointing to. And lo and behold, the first thing that pops out is a Pentax lens. It's an SMC 55mm, 2.8, I believe it is, or 2, sorry, F2. So, and I look at it and I'm like, wow, there's like, the glass is so clean, like it's showroom condition. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay. And I mean, there was some other stuff there, but stuff that I didn't care for. Yeah. And so I brought this lens. It had even, you know, the typical UV filters they used to put back in the day on these things. It came with a metal lens cap. And I walked to the front. I said, how much do you want for this? And she goes, $20. I said, I'll give you 10. She goes, okay. So for $10, I picked up this really beautiful lens that I know if you go on eBay, they probably sell for about 100.
Oh,
and
yeah. I'm like, Minimum.
I'm holding it actually right now as I'm speaking with you, and I'm looking at it, and it's like, it's beautiful. It's an amazing lens. It just goes to show you, you never know what you're gonna find at places like that, and it's probably worth a stop.
Oh yeah, I mean, truthfully, a lot of these places now, I think now it's a little bit more prevalent because film photography is really on the rise on so many different levels. But now, you know, a couple of years ago, you could walk into a place, and some of the cameras that I've found or have had, you could find for dirt cheap. Now, all of a sudden, if you walk into a place like a Goodwill or an antique store, they've started to catch up on the costs of what it is, or what the value, rather, of what it is. I actually have a story about one. I actually can fix a lot of these cameras. I have my Micro Tools, and between that and Polaroid cameras especially, I know how to fix them. And one of the people, probably, I forgot what country he's from. No, he was from Switzerland, and he sent me his camera to kind of fix and tinker with. And he's like, yeah, if not, I'm just going to put it in an antique store. And I'm like, all right, send me a picture of the camera. And it is Canon 7 rangefinder. Like, it's, the body is heavy and beautiful. I love the grip of it, but, you know, he was having trouble with it. And I said, all right, I'll fix it, you know, and do whatever. And I fix it. And he was like, I'll sell it to you. And I didn't realize this man, I think he got it from an estate sale. And he didn't know how much it was. He said, I'll sell it to you for like, you know, $70. And I go, $70? I said, sir, I can't even do that. Like, I'll give you the price that I know it's worth, or at least close to it. You know, I can't. As easy as it would have been to make seven, you know, do it for 70. Because I know how good this rangefinder is, I said, I'll give you the value. And that was probably like 2 years ago. But now, if that same conversation happened now, I think people understand the value of what these cameras are, because they don't make them like they used to. You know, things were meant to last back then. Now everything's built to kind of break. These things are tanks, you know what I mean? So it's a little harder now to find the right things for these, you know, right cameras that are not going to cost the way they did a couple of years ago. I'll still say it's cheaper and easier to find cameras within that range than it is film currently, which is always, I mean, I'm lucky. I have kind of a plug in terms of like film, so it makes it a little easier for me. But watching the film prices fluctuate because they see the value, it's been interesting to see, that's for sure.
Well, it's kind of interesting too that you mentioned that, because you know what I say? I say film is becoming like printers now. You buy the printer, but the ink is more expensive than the printer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. It's becoming outlandish right now. I mean, like, I've been very lucky enough into my travels to befriend a few people that are into film, and one of which, their father has owned a film store in Germany for almost 40 years and took a liking to me. I played on the team that was local to the town and the city, rather. And anytime I really need something, I have two fridges. Like, God bless my wife. I have fridges of film and whatnot. And I've been lucky enough to get a lot of that for literally nothing or close to nothing compared to what I probably should. But yeah, watching the film either get discontinued or be expensive and super expensive. Like, I have a favorite film, and thankfully I get most of that for nothing, but I'd pay for it because I love it so much.
I'm the same. I've got a fridge with a freezer, and that freezer is pretty much all film jammed.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to last me for years. And,
oh yeah.
And you know what? Honestly, nowadays, a lot of people are starting to recognize the costs and they're doing something about it, right? Like, they're starting to bulk load, or they're starting to develop themselves. And black and white is so simple to do. It's easy peasy, you know, lemon squeezy. There's nothing hard about it.
I fell out of practice with developing, and then I was like, all right, I have to get back into it, because I started noticing the labs. Like, there's one lab in particular I still send it to. Like, mind you, I had a lab in town while I was relearning. When I was living in Jersey, I was relearning the whole developer thing. So I was sending it to them. It was up the street from me. And then as I got back to it, they started getting super expensive. And then it was suggested by a film photographer that I follow on Instagram, Boutique Film Lab, and they are fantastic. They're not anywhere near as expensive as my former lab, but they're in Tennessee. And I was like, okay, I'll send it out. And honestly, I now live in Las Vegas. I still send it to them because they're the only ones I'm like, okay, this isn't bad, until I get the space, which I do now. And I'm kind of working my way through kind of figuring out the access to water to the extra room I have to be able to start developing again. But it took me a while to get comfortable so I wouldn't destroy a roll. But the moment I get all of the apparatuses and pieces of equipment that I need to develop and scan, I'm probably going to stop sending it to them, which I know will make them very sad. But I was very happy when I knew it, and I took it for granted. Now getting back to where I'm like, all right, I'm 100% sure that I won't destroy my roll or someone else's, because yes, these labs are getting very expensive, and prohibitively so. It's a good thing, though, because it's forcing people to learn this specific piece of the artwork and get better at it. So like bulk loading, you know, I've known how to bulk load for a long time. And hell, I know how to edit film for like Super 8 and Super 16 to the point where my hands hurt. So it's like it forces, you know, splicing and tape and ugh, like I could feel.
It's like listening to you speak, it's like, holy crap, this is like another me down there.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
I'm the same.
It's forcing people to, you know, and this generation that really likes, you know, loves analog film and eats it up, it kind of forced them to do things that when we thought it was never going to come back, I'm showing people how to do this. And if you would have told me this in my early 20s or late teens, I would have been like, no one's going to be interested in this. People are going to look at, they're looking at me weird already because I got a film camera. You know what I mean? So,
you know, you just kind of remind me of something. So as of late, I've actually been thinking about approaching local community centers here where I live and offering film classes for teenagers or younger people, anybody that wants to learn, really. And that's something I've been toying around with, that idea of just having, you know, just doing like a night class.
Honestly, you should. I mean, so I'm a professional screenwriter as well, and I teach people how to screenwrite. And the thing is, you know, as I said to them before, everything old is new now, and there's an appreciation for those things. And now, especially, at least in my opinion, someone who's like, hey, I'm going to teach tonight, you'll probably have a lot of people who are going to jump in and want that. Because what I think what's happening digitally is that everyone can do everything because it takes them clicking a button. So now if everything is digital, like if everything is special, nothing is special. So digital is everywhere and everyone could do it. They put filters on. So now you have this smaller but large growing group of individuals who want to learn that specific craft and be like, oh, let me be different. Let me set this apart. I think that the market is there for you. You know what I mean? Like it's like, why not?
So let me ask you this. So as you're growing up, right, you're knee deep into film photography, where along your journey in life and in photography, did you say, I'm going to get more into street photography?
As I mentioned earlier, I played professional basketball for about almost 13 years. I lived all over the world. And I think it started when I was living in Vienna. Now, I'm not super big on like taking pictures of everything all the time. Like I let my eyes do a lot of looking and whatnot. But it started in Vienna and I had kind of been doing it off and on again and getting back into it and, you know, seeing the role and getting it. And I started taking a bunch of pictures in Vienna and I was like, wow, I forgot what this feels like. You know what I mean? Like I wasn't doing it consistently enough at the time. And it was in black and white. And I remember going like, you know, that feeling that I don't know how to explain that click, like what that click does, that sound, that shutter sound. But I was like, okay, like I want to get back into doing this and shooting at a high rate. And then I came back to Vegas and I was living here the first time and I started taking a lot of 800T, a lot of center still stuff and neon, and there's a whole bunch of vintage light. I knew at that point, I was like, okay, I'm back. Like I was just going through rolls upon rolls of this stuff and shooting high quality, at least, you know, I'm told that at a high clip. And I knew that I would never allow myself to kind of fade off on film photography again, even though I don't think I really did, but compared to how often I shoot both in street and professionally, I would say it would fade off. But once I was back in Vegas, the last decade has been, I was like, this is what I do, you know, capturing people, capturing the city. Then I lived back in New York, and that's just in my head, the street photography capital of the world, at least in the United States anyway, you know, compared to Vienna and Paris. But just in New York, just running around with a good rangefinder or during New York Fashion Week with a point and shoot, I knew that at that point, it was like, I'm never putting this camera down again. So just street photography was there.
I did street photography in New York. I almost got killed. I don't mean I almost got killed because someone was gonna bash my teeth in because I was taking a photo. I almost got run over by a freaking taxi cab.
So that's so. I knew exactly what you meant, because I tell people, the people are used to people running around with these cameras. That's not an issue, but you gotta look, but keep your head on the swivel, because it's not the people that'll get you. It's a taxi or a bus. You know, don't jaywalk. That, you know, cops don't say that. They don't say that because it's the law. They're saying that because it legitimately will save save your life. So I totally understand.
I wasn't jaywalking, just for the record. Okay.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't jaywalking.
So then there was just a guy who was trying to get from one point to another very fast and probably did not care. And that's what taxis are in New York for sure.
He almost clipped my knee and I'm like,
oh my God, wow.
You know, and I'm not going to say that here in the show, but anyways, I got away. I walked away, nothing, you know, nothing broken, nothing damaged. But I've seen when I, like that one day that I was, that first day that I was photographing on the streets, I saw two guys interacting with taxis in a not so nice way.
Yeah. Yep. Sounds about right.
Yeah. So just to let the listeners know, if you ever go to New York, just make sure you, you know, you put it in the back of your head that you may have a run in with a taxi cab driver in some way.
Some way. And 9 times out of 10, it's not going to be a friendly run in, but it's going to be a run in for sure.
I would definitely say NYC is a mecca for street photography in the U.S.
Absolutely. 100%.
So what camera are you using right now for street photography?
So I would say right now I usually carry, for obviously, the Olympus AF. That is the point and shoot. Then I have my recently gotten the Yashica Electro.
Ooh, nice camera. That's Spider-Man's camera.
Yeah, I love that camera so much. It's one of the things that I explain to people is a camera outside of, like, you know, you have that camera, but it's really the feel of how the grip of a camera is, it means a lot to me, like how it feels, the weight. Some cameras you can feel and it feels awkward and you know you got to go two hands or one hand or do whatever, but you'll have it. The Yashica, that Electro feels so good in my hands. It just, I have that with me. And the Canon 7 rangefinder I told you about earlier, I'll have that sometimes as well. So it's, right. But it's mostly been the Electro since I've gotten it. And, you know, if I could carry my two bulky medium formats around me, I would. But the Electro is ideal. And that's the one I have with me almost all the time.
I actually own two Canon P's.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, not the Canon 7s. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
I do have two Canon P's, and I love them to bits.
Yeah, they're great cameras.
They're phenomenal. They're built like tanks.
Oh, they are adorable.
You put the right lens on those things, and they are just, like, if you didn't know any better, you'd say they're like Leicas, the quality.
I've said that. I tell people, you know, as much as, just to say I've had it, maybe I've shot with a Leica, would I buy a Leica? If it was able to, sure, no problem. Or even if I didn't think my wife would push me down a flight of stairs for doing so. But yeah, the Canon 7 is more than adequate. The P is more than adequate to do that with the right lens. And like you said, and again, they're built like tanks. That's probably my favorite heavy cam, non-medium format heavy cam, where just like, you know, if you drop that on someone's foot, you're going to probably break a toe. But it's 100% a great feel, and it's a really good camera.
I'm just curious, you grew up obviously in the era of film. Who were some of your idols growing up? Who were some of the people that you looked up to?
Oh, wow. That's let's see if I can shorten that list. Because some people say it's a cliche, you know, my grandmother liked Ansel Adams. I was really big on Elliot Porter, Greg Fink. Edward Weston. I've really enjoyed Elliot Porter. I would almost say that Elliot Porter is the reason, because of all the, like, his stuff was a lot of night and halations and light and landscape. I would probably say is the reason why I'm sort of obsessed with, like, neon lights and night photography on film. It's not, I mean, he was more of a colorful nature guy, but it was, he had like one of those old school Kodak box cameras. I think that's a sub genre in my head of why I enjoy night photography on film so much. The only other, you know, there's a couple that, like, Paul Bundy, he's like on the Pacific Coast. There was one guy, I can't remember his name. He's really good. His name is Toby Harvard. Absolutely brilliant. He's one of those guys where that guy was built to have that camera in his hand no matter what. He came out the womb with a camera. He's fantastic.
It's funny that you mentioned who you mentioned, and I'll tell you why. You rhymed off some names that I still have yet to hear anybody mention them.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure if that's because they don't know them or they're too young to know them.
Probably that one. I'm going to say maybe, yeah, maybe that's it.
You know the way things work. The things that stick to the fan the most are the things that are thrown the hardest. And what I mean by that is, you know, people that are more popular, those people that tend to be more remembered.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I think the names you've mentioned really show your age.
Yeah, 100%.
They show your maturity in the craft, because I know who the heck you're talking about. And here, I'll throw another name. I mean, I don't know if you know Gordon Parks.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so Gordon Parks is actually one of my favorite photographers.
Good. That.
His images are so powerful. They are so tragic. They are so beautiful. They remind us of what the human condition really is. It's just, when I look at his images, it's like I'm reading the Bible.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody that knows Gordon Parks, if any of the listeners that are listening know who Gordon Parks is, you know what I'm talking about. You know, he was a photographer for life. His projects that he did were mesmerizing. The essays that he did for life were out of this world. Like, if you don't know who Gordon Parks is, Google Gordon Parks photographer and just take a look at his images. Phenomenal, phenomenal work.
What's crazy, and I remember, I would say like probably a couple, I think it was sometime last year, but I know they started like colorizing some of his black and white photos. And I, you know, that's always a risky endeavor. This is how I know a photographer is like way ahead of his time, where regardless of what happens and how you do it, not only are you saying that the black and white was good, but somehow coloring that black and white in any which way not only doesn't affect it, but actually makes it even more powerful. And I think there was a one called Untitled Harlem, 1960 something or other, and the guy is standing, like, he's in the middle, he's like standing, our freedom can wait, and he's holding, can't wait, and he's holding like a newspaper. And I saw it colorized, and I'm like, oh my god, like, this is incredible to be able to do so, to be able to hit that on the head all these years later, and then have it colorized and think, okay, automatically it's going to mess this up. No, it's remarkable. And that tells you about his eye, where your eye can outdo and outlast technology. Like, it's like, this is going to be good regardless of what you do. And it's phenomenal. And Gordon Parks is up on in that list somewhere too. I would almost say he probably inspired the people who taught me photography for sure. That's a good one. Like you said, you haven't, you Google him. I think they're under, I think it's like the Gordon Parks Foundation or something like that. I know that exists. I don't know if they have an Instagram, but I've seen the website. But go to that, whatever that social media is. They're fantastic. It's fantastic.
You know, if you were to ask me who's a photographer you wish you could just sit down and have a chat with, I think he would be in the top three for me.
That would be a good conversation. I agree with that. I 100% agree with that.
So if you could pick one photographer that you'd want to go on a photo walk with, who would that be?
I would like to go on a walk with Toby Harvard. I think Toby, and if I'm going prior to that, Elliot Porter for sure. But Toby Harvard, like right now, and Elliot Porter, those would be my tie. That would be a tie for me. And there's one more, you know, now that I'm thinking about this, because he's fantastic. He came to my head. He'd probably be on that list too. He's also very good. He's French. His name is Lucas Trojdak. He just makes cinematic film photography. Like, it's just like he tells a movie in like eight shots. I would love to walk with Lucas as well. So those would be my three. Elliot, Toby Harvard, and Lucas. I've interacted with Lucas a couple of times, and I'm a huge fan. A huge fan of what he does. And I would say those would be my top three. I want to take a photo walk. I want to sit and figure out how to make this happen. That would be cool.
You're more of a film photographer than you are a digital photographer, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what film stocks would you say have been in your bag lately the most?
I'm really big on finding new film anytime I can, experimental otherwise. First and foremost, ADOX. ADOX is my favorite film of all time. I always have a role. It's just phenomenal in both. I can't even describe how good it is. I think they're based in Germany and Switzerland, but they're black and white. So they have like ADOX CHS like 100. And then they have their color film, which they don't make a ton of. So I always get it as quickly as I possibly can. Their black and white is fantastic. The second one that's in there has been, I've actually wanted to try it because I haven't had the chance to develop a role, but that Phoenix Harmon, I just wanted to see what that's like. I haven't gotten the good look for myself, but I've seen the results from other people and other film photographers, and it's been fantastic.
I also have seen some images of that film, and it is quite unique.
Yeah, I have a bunch of it, and I'm really excited to really try it. And then I have enough where it's like, okay, these are everyday film. I'm going to say like this is a kind of a small upstart film kind of brand, but Candido, the Candido Collective, they've put together I think I like their 200 ISO and their 400. I haven't really messed with their 800 yet. 800 is its own animal. So like, you know, I'm like putting together, which I'll mention probably later on, I'm doing the whole vintage sign photo coffee book based out here in Vegas and the casinos around it and the signage that exists. And so 800's always in my head is Cinestill and how well it does.
I want to get my hands on that coffee book.
Yeah. I'm very excited, about 40% of the way there. It's been a lot of fun. But yeah, the Candido Collective, if you haven't heard of them or seen it, they're Candido Collective, all one word. Fantastic 200, really a big fan of the 400. And it's one of those things that you could pop in and just go. And that goes with just about anything, point and shoot and whatnot. So those are the three. We have two that I shoot consistently. And then one that I haven't tried but has been sitting in my bag for some time. And one, it's actually almost finished in another camera. So I'm pretty excited to see the results of that Harman and how good or bad it might be.
I've got to pick some up. I'm kind of behind on the eight ball here. I got to pick some of that stuff up. In fact, it's funny because I have a good friend who works at the company that distributes Harman. So it's like, what the hell am I waiting for? I gotta call him. You know, he can probably get me a deal or something, you know?
Yeah, probably. You got to use those advantages the best way you can.
I do want to get my hands on some of those rolls and give them a go. You really are absorbed in photography on the film side, and that's really cool. What's one tip you could give a younger person that wants to start in today's day and age, like in today's market, a new photographer that wants to get into street photography, film photography today? What would be one tip that you would give them?
I would say that perfection is not film photography. What I mean by that is if you're getting into it, that means you're in a generation where digital is perfect in terms of lack of graininess and filters and all this other stuff I watch and I'm not a fan of. I understand everyone has their art. Perfection is not film. Appreciate the imperfection because that is film. The graininess, light leaks. You're going to go through a roll. It's going to mess up. You're going to have a roll that's going to get stuck. You're going to have a roll where you forget it's in there. You're going to open it up and, you know, destroy half the roll. You're going to take pictures that are not perfect because in my head, film photography is as close to what the human eye sees than the human eye. You're going to take pictures that the way you see it. And it's going to take you some time. It's not going to happen overnight. And everyone, the film photography is always going to give you your style, your aesthetic, and your angle of the world. You can try to duplicate it, but every film, you know, everything is different. Every shot is different. So understand that film photography is not perfect. Appreciate the imperfection that is film photography. That would be my advice to someone who's younger than me and getting into it. It keeps them from getting discouraged. You'll get that first roll and you're going to be like, what the hell am I doing? And then you'll get that second roll and probably say the same thing. Third roll, you might mess up and open because you forgot. But as you get better and better, it becomes your thing and how you do it. And there's always an audience for that. There's an audience for what you think is beautiful. And everyone should remember that.
I love that, what you just said, because that is probably the best piece of advice I have ever heard, because you have nailed it right on. It's exactly that. It is film photography, if that's how they want to start, is imperfection. There is no perfection in film photography, and that's what makes it beautiful. And I think that is why people nowadays want to gravitate towards film photography, because it is unique and it is imperfect. Dude, bang on. Perfect piece of advice, honestly. I'm going to transition to your Instagram account, because when I saw your work, I thought, this stuff is beautiful. Like, I love this guy's work. I love this guy's interpretation. I love the way he looks at the world, the way the images reflect what he sees. And I mean, I could pick so many images from your Instagram feed. And listeners, the link to his work will be in the show notes below, so make sure you check it out. I'm looking at your Instagram feed and I can't pick all of them, but I'm going to pick one image to talk about this. And I think it suits very well with what we just discussed about imperfection. And And I don't know if this is an imperfect shot done on purpose or what. I'm going to mention it to you, and perhaps you can give the listeners a little more insight on it. So I'm looking at this post. It's labeled Loofah Balloons, an outtake. And it was posted on April 17th of 2023. There's a girl with balloons. Her eyes are closed. I don't know if her hair is red or if that's something that you did in post. I'm not sure. So I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit more about this image.
It was about, I would have to say about 0 degrees outside. This was in Colorado. And the camera started acting up because it was so cold. I had the Yashica Flex is, now, the backstory for the Yashica Flex, it's an 80-year-old camera. I've had that camera all my entire life. I've had that camera. It's been in at least two other hands in my family, but that camera is old. And that was my medium format for a while. And I took it out in the cold, and it started to seize up in maybe the craziest way possible. But it was working. This picture was taken by accident because I had lost a feeling in my fingers, and I made the click, not realizing that I was pushing the lever to go. And the wind had picked up right at that moment. When I saw it get developed by Boutique Film Lab, I was like, I love this, because that's her hair. Her hair is red. I did not touch it in post. We were doing a whole other shoot, which I think is probably a little further back or a little further forward. And the shoot itself came out great. Temperature just dropped. We got to like the 3 or 4 o'clock hour, and it was incredible. And I love this picture because truthfully for me, it really captured the struggle of how we were, what was going on with this. We were both very cold. My wife was with me, and we were trying to get through this as fast as we can, trying to get through her idea with this, and I agreed with it. I thought it was a cool idea.
Is this your wife then that's in the picture?
No. My wife was off camera.
Oh, okay. She was just kind of helping you out.
Yeah, she was helping me out. And what happened was I took this picture, and this really just felt like it captured the struggle of pulling this off on one of the windiest days in Colorado. It just felt right. Also made me realize the struggle of, I hadn't really shot in something that was cold before, but that was something special. So I saw this picture and automatically knew. I was like, this is great. This is the balloons, the top half of those balloons actually snapped off and blew away right after this. And then we ended up giving those balloons to a group of girls on a bachelorette party that were walking by after we were done. And it was a good day. It was a fun day. That was hard, but I think that captured how hard we were working to capture this art and these shots.
Well, that Yashica Flex, that's a legendary twin reflex camera. So got to give it a CLA.
Yeah, for sure. Needs to be CLA'd for sure. I've dragged my feet on it, mostly because I was just, you know, sometimes, especially with the older cameras, I try to make sure that, you know, I get what I can out of them and hope I don't put it in a position of peril where it could be damaged or anything. The thing is so sensitive. I don't even like shooting with it anymore. Like, I probably shot way more than I expected last year with it. And now it's like, it comes out, it's kind of a special thing. But now it's going to probably get CLA'd before the end of this month. So I'm pretty excited.
So you mentioned you're working on a coffee book. I'm just curious. That made me think, are you now, or maybe you have in the past, I don't know, have you in the past ever done anything like an exhibit or any other similar projects to what you're working on right now? And if not, are you thinking about doing more projects going forward?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I actually started blowing up prints of some of my favorite shots over the course of the last few years. And now this year, there's supposed to be, hopefully, two exhibits. But in the past, I've probably only done one. And it was more or less like, I didn't know if I'd, what I knew how to, but I didn't know if I had the space or the time to do so. And now that my life has calmed down in the best way possible, now I'm in a space where there's an appreciation for it. So yeah, there's going to be a coffee book. There's going to be two exhibits for it, kind of the desert life, so to speak, and then a couple from, I'm out back east from Jersey, New York, that I took over multiple summers on the Jersey Shore. So there's a ton of those that I'm kind of culling through. But yeah, this year will be a lot more of those than I have in the past. It's not even me trying to make it happen. It's actually people reaching out, looking for prints and looking for things, and it makes me happy. It feels like I'm heading in the right direction.
The work is phenomenal. And listeners, go check him out. Great work. Great guy. I can't tell you how much fun I had speaking with you today.
I appreciate that. This was a lot of fun for me.
Kevin, where can people go to check out your work?
So you can go on my Instagram, which is at codename_Leon on Instagram. Then you have my website, kevinlmartin.com. That is up and running, and it's probably needs to be updated for this month. But yeah, there's a ton of stuff there. I name all of my work and terms of collectively putting them in easy ways to get to it. Yeah, those are the two big ones. I am also on X or Twitter, which is under the same name, codename_Leon.
And listeners, we'll have those links in the show notes below. Thank you very much, Kevin. Again, I appreciate you coming on the show. It was a blast and looking forward to seeing more of your work going forward.
Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed the show, please remember to follow and highly rate the show, as it allows me to continue creating more content for you, my awesome listeners. Also, don't forget to join us next week as new episodes are added on Fridays. Until next time, keep walking and keep clicking. This is Mark Rossi. Bye for now.